And now, it's your turn with Dave Mullarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn, 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Mullarkey.
Well, good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the It's Your Turn program for a second straight frigid day. Oh, my. Well, we're going to warm it up on the program today because we have a wonderful guest to chat with us straight away. And it's Bill Hillgrove, the longtime radio voice of the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Pitt Panthers. Bill Hillgrove, nice to talk with you today. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Dave. It's a pleasure. So what's happening in the thriving metropolis of Butler, Pennsylvania, one of my favorite towns?
Well, it's a little frigid up here, but that's the case in Pittsburgh as well, I'm sure. We're usually a few degrees colder than you, but I tell you what, this has been a couple of really weird days, huh? Wow.
Oh, my goodness. What are they calling it? The polar...
Polar vortex.
There you go. Oh my God.
And I swear to goodness...
I hate scraping and shoveling.
I had never heard that phrase until a few years ago. I don't know where it came from. Well, listen, first thing first, Bill Hillgrove, we want to congratulate you on being named just a week or so ago as the honoree of the Woody Durham Voice of College Sports Award. That's quite an honor, Bill.
Well, I am humbled. I'm honored. The banquet will be in June down in Winston-Salem. This is an effort by the University of North Carolina. They're sponsoring it, and also the National Organization of Media People. Woody Durham was the longtime beloved voice of the Tar Heels, and his son Wes is a very active broadcaster these days. He does a lot of ACC football and basketball on radio and television, and he's also the voice of the Atlanta Falcons. So, to have the name Durham associated with mine is quite an honor.
You have done Pitt football and basketball for many, many years, have you not? How far back do you go on that, Bill?
My first basketball broadcast was December 1st, 1969, so this is my 50th season. Of course, Dave, I started when I was 11. And sincerely, when Ed Conway passed in 1974, I had been his color man. Since 1970, and then from 74 to the present, I've been the voice of the radio play-by for the Pitt football team, mm-hmm. and that's 45 years. So I've had a few years in grade.
Wow. I often marvel when I hear you doing a Pitt football game on a Saturday, and I know darn well we're going to hear you doing Steeler football the next day, and sometimes it's halfway across the country. Your travel schedule can really be hectic at times during the fall.
It sure can, and I ran into that this past Thanksgiving weekend. The Panthers were in Miami for a Saturday football game, and then the Steelers were in Denver on Sunday. And Dave, as you well know, traveling Thanksgiving weekend commercially is like javelin catching.
Mm-hmm.
It's just as dangerous. And so when I saw it coming, and I saw what flight I had and how late it got me into Denver, I went to the folks at Pitt and said, "Do you mind if I take a bye and jump on the Steeler charter?" They said, "No problem." So Larry Richard did the game in Miami that weekend, and I was able to at least semi-relax. I used to hustle, from city to city, but as you might suspect, when you get to be my age, that travel, especially it's tougher now, just air travel's tougher, much less, on a Saturday night. Sometimes at some airports on Saturday night, there's nobody there, mm-hmm. and there's no flights. And so, that's really challenging.
Not only that, but these days there are fewer and fewer direct flights from city to city. So many times you have to make a connection, in another city or two, and that just makes it impossible if you're in a real, real hurry.
Yeah, well, for an example, you no longer can fly Pittsburgh to Buffalo, Rochester, or Syracuse direct. You can't fly to Raleigh-Durham, although that's going to change. I think Delta's going to come up with one in June. But you used to be able to fly to Greensboro, North Carolina direct. You can't do that, so it's more daunting than it ever was.
Are you able to fly on the team charters, or is that prohibited and you just have to fly commercial?
No, I am welcome on the Steelers and the Pitt charters when I can make them, but, you know, they're not going to wait for me. So if Pitt has a ball game, a football game Saturday afternoon, the Steeler charter leaves for wherever they're going on Sunday, and it's up to me to catch up. So knock on wood, I haven't missed a Steelers game in 25 years. And because of various reasons, I've been able to ask Pitt to take buys on some basketball games and several football games as well.
I've talked with a lot of people since the end of the Steeler football season who were very disappointed. And, of course, Steeler fans would be not making the playoffs this year. But I did point out, we're perhaps a little bit spoiled around here. I mean, we consider it just a natural thing that the Steelers make the playoffs every year. And that doesn't happen all the time. And it certainly doesn't happen in a lot of other football cities, does it?
I pinched myself when I looked at what I've been privileged to do in 25 years, four Super Bowls. There's a lot of cities can't profess that, for sure.
Yeah, there are some teams that have actually never been to the Super Bowl.
Yep, and I feel badly for those guys. But in the meantime, I think you used a pretty good word, spoiled. Steelers fans don't want to hear that. The expectation is there, and you hear Mike Tomlin say the standard is the standard. So, that's not a bad thing, for sure.
Let's talk a little bit about Coach Mike Tomlin. I saw on social media a lot of people calling for him to be fired. I can't figure those people out. I like Mike Tomlin personally. I like him as a football coach. I just think he's a fantastic, intelligent guy. You have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I kind of echo your sentiments. He's bright. There's no question about that. When he came out of high school in the Tidewater area, he had two offers, William & Mary and Harvard. Well, he decided to stay closer to home. So I think his intelligence speaks for itself. And, you know, I think what people have laid on his doorstep, and he'll accept the responsibility. You know, the buck stops there at that head coaching office door. The Antonio Brown thing. And I will say this, and I think, Tomlin has handled it well. Antonio is skittish as he's been, immature as he has shown. He's never let it affect on the field until this last situation. And to me, that's the unforgivable part. You can't let your sidelight, your sideshows, your personal, interests get in the way of the team. And I think this was the first time he crossed that line. Because prior to that, all of his sideshows were off the field. They were beyond the sidelines. And, he was the first one there and the last one to leave, and he worked very, very hard to make himself the great player he is, and I think he's the best receiver in the game, and I think he's in the argument for the best receiver that the league has seen. But, you can't let that stuff affect the team, and when the team feels that your hand isn't in the pile, much as they felt with Le'Veon Bell, it's really tough to repair that. So let's see how this all works out. I'm not necessarily with those people that think he's gone. But I think it has to play out. And unfortunately, the Steelers have some weeks now before they have to make a decision. So that'll be an intrigue for sure.
Do you think that the rest of the league, I forget where I saw this. It might have been in one of Ron Cook's columns in the Post-Gazette. I'm not sure. That they're laughing at the Steelers over this situation. Apparently, it's come up a number of times during Super Bowl week. I don't pay a whole lot of attention to the media stuff and shenanigans during Super Bowl week, but apparently it's come up. Have you heard that? I mean, are other teams laughing at the Steelers because of this Antonio Brown thing?
Tomlin calls it noise, sometimes elevator noise. Chuck Noll had the same view. You can only control what you can control, and you can't control what people think of you. So if people are laughing, let them laugh. The Steelers will be good again next year. And as long as number seven's a quarterback, and I think he's around for several more years, they'll have a shot at going to the big game. That's just the way it is.
Do you think Antonio Brown is the best receiver the Steelers have ever had? I would have said that in a heartbeat. until I read a story a couple of weeks ago about Lynn Swann. And the writer was making a case that, you know, back in Lynn Swann's days, they didn't pass nearly as much as they do today.
No.
And he indicated that Swann's numbers...
That is for sure. It's just the way the league has morphed. And, of course, you know, the NFL wants points on the board. And so the rules have kind of, you know, gravitated away from the defense and toward the offense. You know, it's always a good argument. And I think any argument about who's the best ever, you know, it's a matter of somebody's opinion. And in my opinion, I think he could be the best ever. Not only in a Steelers uniform, but he's in the conversation with the Jerry Rices and all of the great receivers that the NFL has seen.
Mm-hmm. That's for sure. One final question about the season, particularly the playoff game between the New Orleans Saints and the Los Angeles Rams. That no call was something. That may have been the worst call I've ever seen in watching football for decades.
Yeah, and in addition to the lack of a call, it was helmet to helmet, and that wasn't a call.
Yeah.
I really think Goodell's backed into a corner, but I think, Dave, this has been brewing for a while. Look at last year. Three of the best referees in their prime walked away, and that would be the guys who you hear on television, and that includes Gene Steratore, Terry McCauley, and who was the third? Oh, the guy with the guns, Ed Hockley.
Yeah.
Three of their best walked away in their prime. Why? And that's the question mark. My opinion, they didn't feel that they had their backs covered. And I think the NFL is probably in a crisis era now for officiating. You want to fix that playoff stuff? Okay. I think in championship games only, which includes, obviously, the Super Bowl, I think the last 2 minutes of any game, any championship game, everything should be reviewable. And I think that would help fix what happened to the Saints.
I wish that we could get the reviews finished, you know, in briefer time. Sometimes it seems to take forever. And, you know, the contrast was very evident during the Australian Open tennis tournament, the first of the Grand Slam major tennis tournaments of the year. They have the review of, you know, whether or not a ball is in or out. And it takes about 8 seconds. And that's it. You know, they've got the ruling and they move on. So many times in a football game, they say it's under review and they go to a commercial break for 2 or 3 minutes, come back, and they still haven't decided. That really lengthens the games, don't you think?
Yes, it does, and it should be speedier, but in the case of tennis, it's black and white. It's in or out, and they can decide it much more quickly than looking at it from 17 different angles. And the bigger the game, the more cameras are on the play, so, you know, that's unfair for the so-called lesser game. You know, that should be fair as well, but, you know, it's a problem that the NFL has to sit down and figure out.
What do you think about the Super Bowl, Bill Hillgrove? I'm not saying, do you have a favorite? I'm saying, who do you think's going to pull it off? I hesitate
well,
to
I
go against
the Patriots. Well, I think
the
Patriots are a favorite for a reason, and I always trust Las Vegas because they're the most objective people, I think, on the planet. They don't care who wins or loses. All they care about is their 10%.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that line is there for a reason, and the Patriots are favored. But I'm going to root for the Rams for two reasons. Number one, I don't like the Patriots. And number two, and more importantly, Aaron Donald, a great pit player, is the best player on the Rams. So I'll root for L.A.
He is phenomenal. And I heard Tom Brady, some sound bites from Brady talking about him. And he went on and on. I mean, he just praised him up and down. Well, even Mean Joe Green said this past weekend that he's better than Green was back in his prime. That's pretty amazing.
That's praise from Caesar, for sure.
That's for sure, yeah. Hey, let me talk a little bit about your career before we wrap up here. You took over as the play-by-play man of the Pittsburgh Steelers from the late Jack Fleming, right? Am I remembering that correctly?
That's after Jack retired in 1994, and Dave, I never sought the job. I was a friend of Jack's, and for that reason and other reasons, I was very happy. I was doing television for Channel 4 and doing the pit games, and that was a full enough plate. But I got a call from our sales manager, and he said, Mr. Rooney's listening to your tape. I said, I didn't submit a tape. He said, it doesn't matter. He's using a tape of yours, to compare it to all the other applicants from around the country, and the more he hears yours, the more he likes it. And I went, uh-oh. And then about 2 weeks after that, I got a call from a Steelers staffer, said, we had a meeting last night, and things are looking good for you. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, I'm about to get a job that I didn't apply for, but certainly welcomed. It put me on the big stage. You know, there's only 32 NFL announcers, and it was a career move for me that was very fortuitous. I became a full-time play-by-play guy. And, Dave, as you know, television sports has changed ever since ESPN burst on the scene. And they do things differently. They don't do sports as we knew it and reporting as we knew it. They want to be warm and fuzzy and keep people from, you know, using the remote and going elsewhere. And it's just a changed business.
When you say that Mr. Rooney was reviewing your tape, this would have been 1994. Would that still have been the chief, or would that have been Dan Rooney by that time?
Oh, no, that would have been Dan, because the chief left us in 88.
I didn't remember the
exact
date. And
I got to know him before he or I ever suspected that I would become the voice of the club, because I covered for television, and when he found out that I liked horse racing, we became fast pals, you know, as closely as we could be. But he and I had some great exchanges, and I hope to be able to put them in a book if I decide to write one.
You know, the Rooneys, it's pretty amazing. There's not too many NFL teams that can point to one family being the owner forever. Maybe, I don't know, are the Maras still involved with the New York Football Giants or not, do you know?
Oh, yes, yes. And, of course, the Rooneys and the Maras are entwined by a marriage, which is very interesting. But, yes, those are two of the families who still are involved. I believe the York family, which was married to the DiBartolo family, they're still involved. But, you know, the families are getting less in that league because of, well, conglomeration. That's just our economy. Mm-hmm. But the Rooneys, well, look, three coaches in 40-some years since 1968, that tells you something about their view of stability.
That's right.
It's valued.
Whereas the Cleveland Browns have had three coaches since last October.
I know, but you can see that situation resolving itself, and they're going to be a force to be reckoned with. I believe is starting next year. They'll be a tough win for the Steelers.
When you took over as the Steelers play-by-play man in 1994, was Myron Cope already there, or did he join you later?
No. He started in 1970 with Jack Fleming, so he had already been there for 25 years, basically. And he and I got to work together, and it was a privilege and a pleasure, and I miss him every day. For 11 years with the Steelers, and people don't remember, in 1983, Johnny Sauer, the Pitt analyst, had some heart problems, and the doctors wouldn't clear him. And 3 weeks before the start of that season, the boss at TAE Radio came to Myron and said, Myron, we need you to work Saturdays as well as Sundays. And he said, hey, I got a full enough plate. I got morning commentaries, afternoon commentaries, television commentaries, the talk show, the Steelers. The guy said, yeah, but your contract's coming up next January. He says, I'm all ears. And he decided to join us for a Pit on Saturdays, and it was a privilege. We just had a great time together. We were able to develop some chemistry. So when the Steelers came calling in 94, that was no adjustment for me whatsoever.
Develop some chemistry. What an understatement that is. There's a couple of generations that only knew Myron Cope as a broadcaster. I can remember telling one of the younger folks here at the station that when I was in high school, I used to read Myron Cope's articles, and he looked at me and said, his articles? And I said, yes, he used to, I read them in Sports Illustrated. I don't know whether he was on the staff there, just a contributing writer or what, but I can remember reading him in Sports Illustrated way back when.
Yep, he was on what they call a retainer. And, you know, they had first crack at his works. He was a wonderful writer. He did, I think, five books, but the one that's my favorite is called Broken Cigars. Cope had that pair of funny glasses. Everything he saw in the world was funny, humorous. He could pick out the characters, and that's what this book is all about. And it's a great read, and he was a wonderful writer. I've been in his company. I was his roommate a couple of times, and he'd pace the floor looking for one word. And I said, Myron, it's only one word. He says, Billy, it's like the difference between light and lightning. If you don't get the right word, you don't say what you mean. And I, boy, that was a lesson in writing.
What about your current partners, Tunch and Wolfley? You've been with them for quite a while now, haven't you?
Yeah, it's been a long time. I think it's 17 with Tunch, and Wolf is 14, but those numbers may be fewer than what they are really, what they really should be. You know, they played the game. They played the game at a high level for a long time, and so when they say something, it rings true. They're guys who've been in the trenches, know what it's like, know what the body language can mean, and they see this sideline stuff, and they see what's going on in the huddle, and, you know, it's great insight. I'll give you a great example. Last year in the tragedy for Ryan Shazier, when he went down and grabbed his back, they both saw it, and they both quoted Chuck Noll, who said, "You have to see what you hit and hit what you see." And see what you hit is the most important thing for a football player. Keep that head up. And unfortunately, Ryan ducked his, and that's what can happen. And it's you know, it's a real lesson for young people who want to play the game.
A lot of folks don't realize the difference between doing play-by-play on a radio broadcast or in a TV broadcast. I always considered radio the most intimate of the mass media, because you have to... you have to rely on people using their imaginations. I love the way you say when you're doing a radio broadcast, you know, the Steelers going left to right, or you talk about the color of the uniforms. That enables people to see that in their mind's eye. You know what I mean, Bill?
Yes, Dave, and over the years, some of my dearest letters of praise have been from sightless people who claim that I give them the game. And if I do that for somebody who can't see, certainly I can do it for the larger part of the population who can. And also, it's more challenging because you're on a tightrope and there's no net. You know, if you make a mistake or say the wrong thing, it's there, it's out there. I think if you do television, you can kind of wait a second because people see what's going on. All you have to do on TV is react to what is seen. I have to paint the picture. And when that crowd roars or boos or whatever reaction you can hear through that radio from the crowd, I better be saying something that makes sense, and that's the challenge of it. But it's rewarding. I enjoy it, and as long as it's fun, I'm going to keep doing it.
Oh, I have to ask you one thing before I let you go. I can't talk to you without having you say a word about your longtime broadcast partner on Pitt Basketball.
Dick Grote is the finest athlete Western Pennsylvania has ever produced, and we have been blessed with a bevy of them. But he's the only one who played two sports at the very highest level. Obviously a 16-year Major League Baseball career, but he did play a year for the Fort Wayne Pistons of the NBA. And as a matter of fact, made twice the money then as he did as a shortstop for the Pirates. Wow. But when Mr. Rickey said, "Your legs won't take it, you can't play both, what are you going to choose?" And he wanted basketball because he loves basketball, and basketball came easy to him. But his dad said, "Look, we don't know where this NBA thing's going to go. You're in your hometown. Why don't you sign with the Pirates?" And he signed. Well, on a Friday, he played in the College World Series in Omaha. On Sunday, he sat in Mr. Rickey's box with his dad. And Tuesday, he pinch hit in the Polo Grounds. Now, that's a heck of a quick matriculation, if we want to call it that. He's a rarity and a pleasure to work with, a fair man. If you want to know the truth, in basketball, if big men go out there and fall on their faces, he really doesn't care. But when the guards play poorly, he just, you know, he puts his head in his hands, he stomps his feet. How can this happen? You know, he's a treasure, and it's been a joy for 40 years to work with him.
Bill Hillgrove, you have heard him right here on this radio station, WISR, calling Steeler football radio play-by-play for many, many years. And just a week or so ago, he was voted by the National Sports Media Association as the winner of this year's Woody Durham Voice of College Sports Award. Bill Hillgrove, congratulations once again, and thanks so much for spending a few minutes with us here today. Good to talk with you.
Thank you, Dave, and hi, Butler. I hope to get up there soon.
Okay. Thanks again. We'll see you now. Bill Hillgrove chatting with him. What a legend. And I don't use that lightly. What a legend. And, man, just hearing his voice, you know, I'm almost ready to hear him start talking about the Steelers. Ben drops back. Oh, that's good stuff. Okay, we're going to drop back for a second. We have some more interesting guests to talk with here on the It's Your Turn program today. We'll take a break. When we come back, we're going to be talking about the author of, it's a really good story. It's historical fiction from World War II, if you're interested in that era. The guest is William Grubman. He's not in Butler. We'll be talking with him on the telephone about The Storm Over Paris. I think you'll be interested. And we'll talk to William Grubman right after these words. The Butler County Symphony Orchestra will take you on a trip to Scandinavia this Saturday night in a concert entitled Nordic Winters. The symphony will take on classical works by Nilsson, Grieg, and Sibelius. The symphony will also be joined by nationally renowned pianist Stephen Boos. And all this week, you can get the Sweetheart Special, two tickets for only $35. Check butlersymphony.org for tickets or stop by the symphony office on the Diamond downtown and join the symphony this Saturday night, February 2nd, concert time 7 p.m. at Butler Intermediate High School Auditorium for Nordic Winters.
That frightening sound is one we hear quite often throughout the day. Our heart quickens and immediately we wonder what happened. A medical emergency can be frightening, every tick of the clock crucial. And that's why Butler Ambulance Service is dedicated to be there with every ounce of care possible. Butler Ambulance Service is within minutes of providing you or a loved one with treatment and transportation. Call 282-9595 to find out more. Butler Ambulance Service is a phone call away from serving you.
Hi, this is Howie Pinckney with Pinckney Capital Management in Portersville. Today, many people need help managing their investments. The investment options available today can be confusing. If you would like to talk to someone for help, why not call me for an appointment? Howie Pinckney at Pinckney Capital Management, 1284 Perry Highway, Portersville, Pennsylvania. My telephone number is 724-368-4224. Securities and advisory services offered through Commonwealth Financial Network. Member FINRA, SIPC, a registered investment advisor.
Boy, a fascinating story. Listeners, coming up on the next segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR. I'm Dave Malarkey. Our guest is William Grubman, author of The Storm Over Paris, and he joins us by telephone today. William Grubman, nice to make your acquaintance. I'm anxious to chat with you.
And you as well. Thank you very much for having me.
The Storm Over Paris. Folks, most people, I think, know about the Nazis and how they would steal art and other valuables from the citizens of Europe, particularly Jewish people, during World War II. But here's the premise of this story. What if a Jewish art dealer turned the tables on Hitler's regime and risked everything he knew to recover some of the famous paintings for safekeeping? And that's, in a nutshell, the theme of your book, right, William?
It is. It certainly is.
Now, the Nazis really did steal a lot of art and valuable paintings, did they not?
A great deal of art, yes. Mm-hmm. Thousands and thousands of paintings and sculptures.
I've even heard that in some cases they stored them in caves, secret caves around Europe. Have you run into that, sir?
That is correct. They stored them everywhere, in several countries.
Mm-hmm. Was much of the art and valuables stolen from Jewish people who were then being deported to concentration camps and death camps?
Well, it was a combination of things. It was a combination. It was art in general. Hitler's goal was to build a museum in Austria, a combination museum, parade grounds, hotel, concert venue, etc., and he wanted to stock it with the best art he could get. That art was going to have to come from somewhere, and it was going to be cheaper if they just stole it.
Mm-hmm. Your book is, I think we could categorize it as historical fiction, correct? I mean, it really happened,
it is,
after
it's
all.
It is historical fiction, and I wrote it as a thriller.
How did the Nazis find this art and steal it? I assume they had regular soldiers, right, who went into homes and just took the stuff?
Exactly. And art is very well known. Good art has provenance. Provenance gives us a listing of the artists and where their art is located. Even today, we know where every major painting is in the world, what collection they're in. So Hitler had access to this information, and certainly with the help of people from museums, etc., they could pinpoint who has what, and they literally went in and took it.
How did this happen? I assume in several countries, and probably in any country that the Nazis had occupied, I guess, huh?
That's correct. It's, you know, we always hear the expression, the spoils of war, and this was one of them for Hitler. This was what he was going to do. He was going to loot the world of the finest artwork possible. For a while, he did.
Let's talk a little bit about the basic plot of your book. Your main character is a Jewish art dealer by the name of Maury Rothstein, correct?
Correct.
And what does he decide to do, William?
Well, Maury's enlisted by Hermann Göring, who is one of Hitler's top guys, who is stationed between Germany and, he found himself in Italy too, and a lot of time in France. And Hermann Göring was also very interested in art. That was sort of his passion. And he was a great collector. And it was his job to help oversee what was going to be taken from France. And he enlists the help, I'm using that term loosely, from Maury Rothstein. Basically, he told Maury, you're going to be working for the Nazis now. And there's two choices here. He'll either go to work for the Nazis or he'll wind up in a prison camp.
Mm-hmm.
And Maury has no choice but to accommodate their requests, which he does.
Maury Rothstein himself, obviously an expert in some of the master paintings and the great artwork of Europe, I guess.
Maury is one of the most well-known experts in the world.
Mm-hmm. How does he
he comes with credentials.
How does he decide to flip and turn the tables?
It was a slow decision, but a painting showed up in Maury's gallery. And it was a painting from somebody that he was very, very close friends with, a painting he had sold the man. And that's when he decided, could he actually get away with stealing this art if it was possible to replace it with a forgery? And that's where we enter Maury's son, Emile, who was a master painter at the École des Beaux-Arts.
Mm. I'm trying to think of my knowledge of the German occupation of Europe in World War II. France was one of the early countries to be occupied. It was occupied by the Nazis for 4 years. However, Paris was not bombed. All of the great landmarks of Paris, Eiffel Tower, the Arc de Triomphe, Sacré-Cœur, all of those places remained unharmed. What about the Louvre, which is, you know, arguably the most famous museum in the world? Did the Nazis steal any stuff out of the Louvre?
The Louvre was somewhat untouchable because the French were so in tune with their own art. I did decide in the book to take some liberty using some art from the Louvre, but basically most of the art from the Louvre was moved out. It was secreted right out of Paris when it was known that the Nazis were going after artwork. And they literally pulled the paintings out of their frames, rolled them up, and got them out of the city.
Hmm. Were there any other major well-known museums in occupied countries that were looted?
There were, but I didn't deal with them in the book. I decided I was going to deal with the people rather than the history of the art itself. So I stuck with just the paintings that were going to flow in and out of Maury's gallery, and I worked with the history of Paris itself. Because, as you said, Paris was occupied, but there was no war in Paris.
Yes, the
Nazis...
There
were no gunshots, there was no fighting.
Mm-hmm.
Paris remained as Paris was. But war did hit Paris. There was no money. People had to close their businesses. Things just started to stand still. Everything was rationed. There was a black market for food. There was a black market for just about everything. If you needed supplies and you could afford it, I mentioned this in my book, the black market was available, but that was for a select few.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and even when the Allies, the Americans, the British and the Canadians retook Paris, liberated Paris. It was one of the first big cities as they marched from Normandy toward Berlin. Again, all of the major landmarks were spared. That was not the case all over Europe, though. I'm thinking, William, of Monte Cassino in Italy, which was pretty much bombed to smithereens, wasn't it?
Well, you know, the artwork in Europe was a major issue. And that's where we enter the Monuments Men, a United States organization,
mm-hmm.
Who, in conjunction with the Europeans, started to map out the major monuments and the major art of Europe and documented it on maps, instructing Allied forces, don't bomb in these specific areas. These are areas we need to preserve. And they were very important to the war effort.
By the way, a couple of books written about the Monuments Men and an outstanding movie. Have you had any inkling that somebody might be interested in making your book, The Storm Over Paris, into a motion picture, William?
Well, I've had some interest, and there's no deal made yet, but I'll keep my fingers crossed.
Mm-hmm. This book garnered five-star reviews on Amazon. It's a nail-biting tale, The Storm Over Paris. We have a few more minutes to chat with William Grubman, the author of the book. We'll take a quick break, and we'll be back to pick up our conversation here on It's Your Turn on WISR right after these words.
In the new year, make a resolution to be better informed. Bookmark PAPost.org and make it part of your daily reading. While you're at it, subscribe to The Context, so you'll receive a curated list of important stories in your inbox every day. You can be confident that the reporting you receive from PA Post is trustworthy, because PA Post is a nonprofit, nonpartisan news organization whose first priority is to report on Pennsylvania policies and issues, holding those in power accountable. Jump in at PAPost.org.
Curious about the world around you? From politics and gardening to unlocking the secrets of longevity, experience Mind Matters, a free series created especially for baby boomers and beyond. Mind Matters is a series for older adults to watch, learn about new things, and then engage with their peers. Contact your local senior center for more information. To locate your nearest center, visit aging.pa.gov. Again, that's aging.pa.gov.
Hi, this is Dave Malarkey. I'd like to talk to you for just a moment here about the good folks at the Society of St. Vincent de Paul here at Butler. What a great job they do to help those who are less fortunate in many ways. They operate the St. Vincent de Paul Food Bank, of course. They have their St. Vincent de Paul Thrift Store in the Greater Butler Mart and their Client Aid Program. And the Client Aid Program helps needy families or individuals, you know, maybe with help on a heating bill or a rent payment at the end of the month. Client Aid. And that's funded through the operation of the thrift store. So you can help by donating items that you no longer need or want to the thrift store. It's very easy to do. Drop-off bins are right inside the door. You can use the container outside. They're located in the Greater Butler Mart. So think about it. Next time you're cleaning the closet or the upstairs, instead of throwing that stuff away, why not donate it to the Society of St. Vincent de Paul here in Butler? We stand tallest when we stoop to help others. Welcome back. I'm Dave Malarkey. You're listening to It's Your Turn here on WISR. We're chatting with author William Grubman about his really, really good book, The Storm Over Paris, a nail-biting tale of art theft and kidnapping and murder in World War II Nazi-era Europe. So some of this stolen artwork, I imagine, Gearing kept for himself. Other stuff was just hidden. Is that correct, William?
Well, the rest of the artwork was being shipped out of Europe out of Paris into Austria and Germany.
I see. Austria was the location that Hitler planned for this grand museum, because that was actually his home country, correct?
That is correct. That is correct. Mm-hmm. And you were also correct. Hermann Göring, as a collector, was siphoning off pieces for himself as well.
So without giving away your book, of course, because it's a thriller after all, your main character, Jewish art dealer Mari Rothstein, decides to try to retake some of this stolen art. How does he manage that? Does he put together a team of people, or does he do it himself, William?
He does it with the help of his son, Emil. His son, Emil, is a art student at the École des Beaux-Arts. He's a master student. And for one of his projects for acceptance to the school, he copied a painting. The painting was titled The Expulsion of Hagar, and that painting plays a major part in the story. And Maury went to his son and said, could you copy a painting quickly if I needed you to? And that discussion turned into copying several paintings that would be swapped out for the originals. Maury would give the copies back to the Germans, and he would store away the originals for safekeeping for their owners.
The Expulsion of Hagar is a famous painting still today by Caravaggio. Is that the painting that's on the cover of your book, William?
Well, that's a composition of the painting. We had to make some adjustments for the story, but yes.
So, what a terrific idea. How'd you ever come up with this, sir?
I've always wanted to write, and I've always been interested in art. I'm an avid collector, and I decided I wanted to write about art forgery because there's so much of it in the world. And I started to write a story that took place in modern-day New York. Started to work on the project. And as I was writing, I realized my story had nothing to do with New York, but I had to go back to the beginning to make the story make sense, and the beginning turned out to be Paris, World War II.
How about the art world? How was it affected by these thefts? There had to be art historians and art lovers who were just beside themselves.
Well, you have to remember, during the war, people didn't know what was going on. Communication wasn't the same then as it is now. If something happens in Paris at 9 a.m. On a Tuesday morning, at 9:01, the entire world knows about it. So communication wasn't as existent as it is now. People really didn't know what was going on with the art world. There were those, but it wasn't like today. We didn't get news updates in real time. But the art world was very concerned that this art was going to be spirited away, and where was it going to be kept, and how safe was it?
Mm-hmm.
That was a major issue for the war.
Were the thefts mainly famous paintings, or were sculptures also heisted?
It was a combination of both. Sculptures were certainly an issue, but not the same as paintings. Paintings were much more mobile.
Mm-hmm.
It was easier to throw 10 paintings into a truck than it would be to move a major stone piece.
In the film that you mentioned earlier in our conversation, Monuments Men, they find a lot of this stuff hidden in a cave. Did that really happen too, or was that...
Well, Hollywood took some leeway with it, but yes, they did. They absolutely did.
Walter...
There are pictures on the internet of those, of that, the storage of the art, if people want to Google it.
William Grubman, the folks, spent much of his corporate career in the wholesale paper industry. When he left the confines of corporate America, he and several old friends formed Act 3. Is that an acting company, William?
No, Act 3 is a singing group.
Oh, wow. And are you still together? Are you still performing?
There, two of us are still performing, yes. We do. We perform all the time.
Act 3 is the subject of an award-winning documentary film, Once Upon a Dream, which is narrated by Richard Dreyfuss. Everybody knows that. But you have been an avid student of art history for much of your life, eh?
I have been. I find art fascinating. Specifically, my passion at this moment in time is porcelain painting. I find the works that have survived for 100, 200 years on porcelain very interesting, that people have protected these pieces from damage.
And by the way, some very famous porcelain was made in Germany, too. I imagine that some of those pieces were part of these thefts.
I would think so, yes. I can't be specific because I didn't let my research go into that type of work, but certainly Dresden was in Germany.
And I think there's a Meissen, I believe, if I'm not real knowledgeable on porcelain, but I think some of that. We have a museum here in our town that has a wonderful collection of Meissen porcelain, so that's very valuable as well. Were there ever pieces, to the best of your knowledge, famous pieces that were never recovered, William Grubman?
There is some art that was not recovered from the war, and there is artwork from World War II which are in the wrong collections at this time still. And those are just sort of the pitfalls of that time.
Yeah, we see that in the news every so often, don't we, where somebody owns a piece that the Nazis had stolen and, you know, the real owner wants it back, or the country of origin wants it back for their museum. That pops up in the news occasionally.
Exactly. And there are pieces in the Louvre that, in fact, do not belong to the Louvre collection to this day, that belong to Jewish families who have perished. They may have descendants, but they still have them on the books as not their own property.
Well, as you mentioned earlier in our conversation, William Grubman, the spoils of war, because this goes back a long, long time. There are pieces in the Louvre, I believe they're called the Elgin Marbles, if I'm remembering correctly, that come from ancient Greece, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Were you forced to go to Paris to do research on this, or not?
I did. I had to go to Paris a couple of times.
To
research the locations of the city.
What a hardship, huh?
Well, you know, somebody had to do it, and it was me. But interesting, it was a great city to work in because nothing really has changed that much. Few street names have changed. I had to research back to make sure my street names were correct. Things such as that, I had to make sure that we were on track. Everything in my book is real, except the story.
Hmm.
So many of the characters that Maury's interacting in are characters from history. Even minor characters that he might meet on the street and say hello to, in fact, were real people.
Do you use real pieces of art that were stolen, or are those the figment of your imagination?
Most of the art that I discuss is real. A couple of pieces I had to invent.
Wow, I didn't realize you could do that. No legal entanglements by using real famous pieces of art, no?
No, because history is history.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if they were stolen, they were stolen, right?
What it is, yes.
Mm-hmm. Now, there's also kidnapping and murder in your story, so it gets pretty tense, I guess, right, midway through?
Well, it was a dog-eat-dog time, and Maury was faced with potential imprisonment and or death, and his wife was instrumental in those scenes. I won't give away the story, but it was going to be survival of the fittest.
I knew of Hitler's idea of building this grand museum in Austria. So Hitler wanted to collect art. I did not know about Hermann Göring, the Reichsmarshal. He was an art collector as well, eh?
Major collector.
Any of the other...
He had several thousand pieces in his home.
Any of the other notorious German figures whose names we would recognize involved in this?
Well, there were other people, but I decided to keep the story focused on just the two people. What I tried to do was paint Hermann Göring as a figure different than the Hermann Göring we know. We think of Hermann Göring as a brutal killer. I'm not dismissing that; he certainly was. But I tried to bring some empathy to the character and demonstrate that, in fact, there was a side of him that was very in tune to the beautiful things in life and the relationship that I could build between him and Maury Rothstein rather than the war. And I tried to take the war out of the picture when it came to those two.
Boy, if your book Storm Over Paris ever, in fact, is made into a movie, who would play Maury Rothstein? I'm trying to think. George Clooney was one of the big stars. It was actually an ensemble cast in Monuments Men. You might need that too, William.
I'm happy to have George take the part.
I guess so. The Storm Over Paris is the title of this historical fiction thriller. It's a pretty good read, I'll tell you, by William Grubman. If you're looking for him online, it's Grubman, William Grubman. And I'm assuming your book's available in independent bookstores and online, William.
That's correct.
Nice to talk with you today. You've got a good book here. Appreciate the chat.
Thank you very much for having me. Have a great day.
And you too. So long now, sir.
Bye now.
When you want a home-cooked meal at a reasonable price, go to Michael's Restaurant. Featuring Italian and American cuisine, daily lunch and dinner specials, prime rib on Fridays and Saturdays, and homemade desserts. Open 7 days a week from 7 to 9, Michael's Restaurant on 422 near the Butler Fairgrounds.
If you're thinking about buying a car, truck, or SUV, or even if you just bought one, make sure you check out the great rates at Armco Credit Union. Through February 28th, you can get a 60-month loan on new and used vehicles for as low as 2.24 annual percentage rate. We'll even refinance your loan from another financial institution. It's never been easier to join. So call today for other rates and terms or visit us at armcocu.com to become a member. Armco Credit Union is an equal opportunity lender and federally insured by NCUA.
Still one more quick interview, and please stay tuned for this because we're going to be speaking with medical doctor, Dr. Tina Chopra, who warns of misinformation about infectious diseases, particularly bacterial pneumonia. That's coming up in just a moment.
It may be winter outside, but at Osterling's Lawn and Garden, it's time to think spring. Water your asparagus, horseradish, and rhubarb roots and blue and red potatoes by January 31st. Make a plan for berries, grapes, and sub-zero roses, all arriving the first week of April. Stock up on planter trays, inserts, heat mats, germination stations, and peat pellets. Plus, pick up Espoma, organic seed starter, and potting mix, organic fertilizers, and earth boxes, and replant kits. You can find it all at Osterling's Lawn and Garden at the corner of Monroe and Jefferson Streets in Butler.
Whether you're a competitive athlete or a weekend warrior, any injury that keeps you on the sidelines should be treated by a sports medicine expert. Tri-Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers offers sports medicine specialists right here in Butler to get you back to enjoying the activities you love. Doctors Rob Waltrip, Josh Szabo, and John Richmond have trained with some of the biggest names in orthopedic sports medicine and use their expertise to treat you. Tri-Rivers accepts most major insurance plans, including both Highmark and UPMC. Learn more at TriRiversMSK.com. Tri-Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers, partnering with the Butler community for more than 20 years.
Coming up on the next segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR, listeners, I'm Dave Malarkey, by the way. We're going to be talking with a physician about viruses and bacterias and misinformation and all sorts of things that you really should know, especially now we're smack in the middle of cold and flu season. How much do you really know about the bugs that make us sick? It can be confusing. Our guest is Dr. Tina Chopra. Doctor, nice to have you with us for a few minutes here today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So let's talk first of all about bacterial infections and viral infections. Are they the same thing, and why is it important to know the difference if they're not?
They are not the same. They are different organisms. Bacterial infections are treated with antibiotics, and viral infections are treated with, supportive management, fluids and bed rest and things, and antivirals if needed. So because they are treated differently, it's very important to understand the difference. Also, they present differently. We are in the middle of flu season, and flu will present in a very different way. You know, high-grade fevers, chills, rigors. Patient usually has a lot of body aches, headaches, and that's how a viral infection presents. Whereas a bacterial infection, usually patient has fevers and productive cough. In either case, it's very important that the patient seeks medical attention right away to prevent serious complications.
Are infections caused either by only a virus or a bacteria, or can you get them some other way?
Infections can be caused by other types of organisms as well, you know, not just by bacteria or viruses, or they can be both sometimes, you know. You can get influenza and you can get superadded bacterial infection on top of it. But other organisms that can cause infections can be fungal, you know, they can be parasitic infections, so they can be several other infections as well.
Well, at this time of the year especially, I want to talk about something called community-acquired bacterial pneumonia. What is that, doctor, and who is especially at risk?
So it's exactly as the name says it. You know, it's a pneumonia is an infection of the lungs, and to break it down further, it's called bacterial. It's caused by a bacteria. Most common bacteria is Strep pneumoniae that causes bacterial pneumonia, and it's community-acquired. You don't have to have an exposure to a hospital setting to get it. Patients who are at higher risk are patients who are older, more than 65 years of age, and patients who have complex medical conditions like diabetes, asthma, pulmonary disease, smokers, and such.
Mm-hmm. By the way, is there any way for a doctor to tell specifically whether it's a bacterial or a viral infection? Are there tests for that?
Yes, we have diagnostic tests available to test for influenza. For example, you have a nasal swab that can be sent for a test that can easily diagnose it. And for a bacterial infection, usually we do cultures. You know, we can do we can take a sputum sample and look at it under the microscope. It's called a Gram stain to look for bacteria, and we can do blood cultures as well. So there are several diagnostic tests available to diagnose them.
Getting back to this community-acquired bacterial pneumonia, is there anything that can be done to prevent it, doctor?
Absolutely. We have vaccination available, pneumococcal vaccination available to prevent bacterial pneumonia. And to prevent influenza, we have the influenza vaccination available, the flu shot. Also, in addition, the simplest thing we can all do is wash our hands to prevent transmission of infections.
Talk a little bit, if you will, about antibiotic resistance. I've heard a lot about this in wire stories over recent years, that people sometimes use it too much or too much of it, and then they develop a resistance and it doesn't work anymore.
That's so true, and that's a great question. Antibiotic resistance is a serious threat as labeled by CDC, and strep pneumo, which is the most common cause of pneumonia, has developed resistance to many antibiotics. So bacteria keep evolving and developing resistance, so we need newer antibiotics in the pipeline, and we need to use antibiotics that we have very judiciously. Also, you know, it's very exciting at this point to have newer antibiotics. I'm partnering with Paratek Pharmaceuticals to raise awareness about a new antibiotic called Nuzyra or Omadacycline that's recently been FDA approved for treating community-acquired bacterial pneumonia in adults. It's a very unique antibiotic because it has both IV and oral formulations, and we can easily transition our patients from hospital to the home setting. Also, it has a once-daily dose, so it's easy to administer it. Like other antibiotics, it can have side effects like nausea, vomiting, and such. So it's important to talk to your physician about it. But I'm, as an ID physician, I'm very excited to have this option available for my patients.
Fact or fiction, Dr. Chopra, taking multiple antibiotics to treat a single infection is better than taking one stronger treatment. True or false?
That is absolutely false. You know, as an antibiotic steward, you want to use the right antibiotic, the right drug, the right time, and the right dose. So more is not better in this case. And you want to use an antibiotic that you know is going to work for your bacteria. And that information can be gathered through susceptibility testing at the hospital. You know, which bacteria are you growing and whether it's susceptible to the antibiotic.
A little bit more about our guest. Dr. Tina Chopra is an infectious disease specialist in Detroit, Michigan, affiliated with multiple hospitals in that area. She's the corporate medical director of infection prevention, hospital epidemiology, and antibiotic stewardship at Wayne State University. One final question, doctor. Where can we get more information about what we've been talking about here today?
Sure. I would direct you to cdc.gov/flu to get more information about it.
Dr. Tina Chopra. Thanks, doctor. Thanks for being with us today.
Sure. Thank you for having me.
Hey, J.J. Wilson here, host of This is the 60s. Well, let me tell you about the show. It's a gas.
It's eight.
It's bad.
It's a blast.
It burns rubber.
It's cherry.
Why, you ask? Check it out and see. We've got the best music from the best decade. The best toys, games, TV shows, news headlines, trivia. You'll remember a lot. You'll learn a lot. Dance a little. Laugh a little. It'll be far out, man. Join me this weekend for This is the 60s. I hope I see you.
Tune in Saturdays just after the news at noon on WISR. Thanks for joining us for today's edition of It's Your Turn with Dave Malarkey here on WISR 680 AM. Today's broadcast is also archived for you online at WISR680.com. Tune in again next time for Dave Malarkey's It's Your Turn, weekdays from 12:30 to 1:30, right here on WISR 680.
Tommy Rowe and Sweet Pea on WISR 680 AM. More music coming up for you in just a moment or so. We will have CBS News at the top of the hour, and that'll have local news headlines right after it. Right now, sunny and cold. Our